That's what I told Amanda. Turn them facing right this way. She's like, yeah, but it's 10 o'clock.
We're not happening. I'm looking here.
We're both here on the computer.
As soon as Chris gets off and under the table, we'll start the meeting.
Those of you with mics, if you could turn them on, please.
Turn on your mics.
Yeah, a little button right there, a little triangle.
Gotta hold it down, Mike, until it turns green. Until it turns green. There you go.
All right, go ahead. Good morning. We'll call the Steuben County Health, Human Services, and Education Committee meeting to order. Paul, would you lead us in the pledge, please?
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Dr. Chapman, if you'd like to make the trek up here.
Morning.
Thank you. While he's on his way, we need approval of the September 2nd meeting minutes.
I'll move it.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Carried.
Wow, I wasn't prepared for this, standing at podium.
Nah.
This is different. I've got just one item to start us off with. It's a cost of living adjustment from New York State Office of Mental Health. We recently received $6,703 from the state. So I'm looking to get your permission to accept the funding and also adopt the attached resolution that attests that my department, Community Services, will use the funding just for salary and fringe-related expenses. Excuse me.
I'll move it.
Second.
All in favor? Normal?
Is this like an annual thing or?
Yes. Yeah. And to be honest with you, it's, I can't even begin to explain the formula that the state uses to make this, but it doesn't cover our salary and fringe increases. But as you guys know, every little bit helps. So.
Any other questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carried.
Great. Thank you.
Carol,
anything
ask,
else?
Carol, could I ask Dr. Chapman sure. a question? I was just curious if you're seeing any increase in requests for help from mental health assistance with the shutdowns and all the restrictions, and are you seeing any additional need for services, and how is that going?
That's a good question, Kelly. We actually have seen an increase, especially with our crisis outreach services. In the very beginning and the early onset of COVID, so to speak, we had a lot of people calling our after hours number. Wasn't necessarily psychiatric based, but they had a lot of questions concerned about COVID. So of course we were able to steer them in the right direction with that. But I think I'm safe to say that there's a lot of added stress to the families, you know, to individuals just coping with the changes with schools and, you know, businesses, everything else. But on a positive note, people have really adjusted to the new way of providing services. And what I mean by new way is the state during the pandemic has relaxed the regulations. So it allows us to do a lot of counseling over the phone and or those that have the computer technology, so to speak, at home. We're able to do video conferencing with them and provide the counseling that way. We are seeing roughly about 20 to 25% of our clients are being seen on site. And what we've done is we've given folks that don't have the technology at home, they don't have access to the internet, or they don't have the equipment, or just the phone counseling hasn't been working well for them, we see them on site on a regular basis. So a combination of those things, I think I'm safe to say, we're doing a pretty good job of meeting the needs of the community. But overall, there is an increased need. It's been a challenge to keep pace, but we're doing the best we can.
Thank you.
Any other questions, Gary?
If you can't do it electronically, do most of these people have cell phones where you could FaceTime or?
Yes, and we do that. However, as you guys know, there's still some areas within the county that people don't have cell reception or it's not good reception. So that can be a difficulty for some. And those are the ones that we've targeted, so to speak, and that we're seeing them on site.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you, Dr. Chapman.
Great. Thanks, everybody.
Next, we have Kathy. She's on, right?
She's online.
Kathy, good morning.
She's muted.
There. Can you hear me now?
Yes. Yes. Good morning, Kathy.
Good morning. How are you? So I am here this morning to request I'm here with Andy Morse from purchasing, and I need to request the bid for our furnace vendor and repair and replacement for the upcoming heat season.
I'll move it.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any questions?
Why do we wait this late in the season? Yeah. I mean, you normally work on furnaces in the summer because they need to be running in the winter.
When does it? Well, I think our term expires August, September. So.
Okay.
So Andy, are you on? This is the month that we typically come, Scott, to do this, and I do believe it's because the contract period runs out for the vendor.
Okay.
So we're timely. We'll be okay.
Any other questions for Kathy? We have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried.
Thank you.
Darlene, good morning.
Good morning. I have a few contracts I'm looking for approval for this morning. The first one is the usual for preschool related services for an Anthony Cerneski in Middlesex, New York, with the same rates that we pay everyone else. Do you want to take these one by one?
Sure.
I would think so, yes.
I'll move it.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, thank you. Then there's a few new contracts. This is in relation to, being able to increase our staffing capacity in relation to COVID. You may recall that we received monies from the state just for that sole purpose of increasing capacity to assist with the COVID work. So I think you have this before you. I know it was a little bit late in coming. What we're looking for is a new contract with ADECO Medical and Science Staffing, and that would be for any data entry assistance that we could get from them, as well as potentially an LPN or an RN at for the data entry, it'd be $25.20 per hour.
Any questions? Do we have a motion?
Move it.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried.
Okay. The next one is a nurse finder agency, AMN Healthcare. Again, just in hopes of being able to pick up some nursing help through them. It depends upon, an RN, it would be an 82 an hour, an LPN would be 55 an hour, and a medical assistant would be 40 an hour. We're just trying to list them all for you because we just not sure what availability they'll be able to, or what kind of staff they'll be able to provide us with, as well as exactly what our need will be at that point in time. So we just thought if we could get, you know, all of these listed for you for approval, and then we can take advantage as the need arises.
I'll move it.
Second.
All in favor?
So I have a question.
Aye. Have a question.
Aye.
So are we going to be able to get some of those people, the RNs and the LPNs?
Yeah, that's a good question, Hilda. You know, so far, no. you know, and of course, I think that the distance is a little bit of a problem. I think these are located more in the, you know, Rochester and outlying areas. So driving this far is not necessarily desirable for a lot who are on their staff. So, but, you know, we'll keep trying. I mean, if they don't have somebody today, they might have somebody, you know, in a few weeks or a month. Just never know. Having that option, you know, ready at our disposal is helpful.
Any other questions?
I got a question. The money that we receive from the state, is that going to cover all these services?
Well, it's a huge start to it. Yeah, it's going to cover a lot of it, most of it, maybe all of it. It was a good chunk of money.
And Jack, when we had talked this weekend, you said that the ADECO staffing might amount to like 2 full-time equivalents?
Yeah, especially, I mean, I think Mr. Potter wanted to talk about it, but if we are able to, well, when we are able to, because we know we are, stand up joint testing with Chemung County, we're going to need that. And it would be 2 FTE approximately, but it wouldn't be, you know, necessarily 40 hours a week. Some weeks it might be, others it might not.
Right.
John, you have a question?
Yeah, I'd just like to know what the pot of money is, the dollar amount that we're going to use for this program.
Chris, it was right around 300,000, wasn't it?
Yes. And if that doesn't cover it, we can get 50% from state aid through their emergency funding.
Thank you.
Any other questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carried.
I do have another one, Reliant Staffing Systems, Inc. Again, for our RNs, it's $49.98 an hour for LPN, $38.73 an hour.
I'll move it.
Second.
Any questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carried.
One last one with Pathways. Chris, can you speak to this in a little bit more detail?
Yes. We had a contract with Pathways, and we had 2 full-time RNs that we were using with that anyway. But we are increasing that budget to include 1 full-time LPN and 2 contact tracers that will be paid with the COVID grant, and then 1 part-time clerk for 15 hours a week that will help us out since we just had a staff member resign and get us through until we can fill her position. And so the total amount of that contract will be increased to $365,000. But about $170,000 of that was already budgeted in the county budget for the 2 RNs we had.
Is there a motion?
I'll move it.
Second.
Any questions?
Can you explain the math again to me? I kind of lost her when she referenced 365,000 and 170.
Right.
It's increasing. I'm sorry, go ahead, Chris.
We had 170,000 in the current budget for Pathways because we have 2 nurses that we employ through them anyway, typically. One is paid for by a DSS, I don't know, grant or funding, and another one is paid for with our state aid. So we increased it about 190,000 to cover 1 full-time LPN and 2 part-time contact tracers that will work on COVID that will be paid for by our COVID funds. And then we also are going to put on a part-time 15-hour clerk for a couple months until we can fill our position of the person that just left.
Okay.
We were notified yesterday of a staff person in a clerk clerical position that is resigning, recruiting that right now. Darlene already, you know, is working with personnel on that active list, but it's going to be some time, and they're already underwater on a lot of things. So we figured we're going to be saving on that salary anyhow, so might as well contract in the interim.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried.
So I have a general question. So can we, Darlene, can you give us an update on where we are with the whole COVID issues?
Yes, I can. In terms of numbers, I can report to you as of this morning, we have 604 individuals who have tested positive across the county since this started. 227 of them are currently active positives. Fortunately, we have 325 who have recovered. We have 17 in the hospital. There have been 52 deaths. However, just the minute before I walked into this meeting, I've just been notified of more at Corning Centers. So there will be more that we report out at the end of the day today. But, you know, I've said this to internally to those of us out here at EOC. I think the number that is shocking to me is the number that we have in isolation and quarantine right now, which is 834. When at our peak in April, early May, it hovered at the 300 mark. So in a very short order, within really just a few weeks starting in September to right now, we've almost tripled the number in isolation and quarantine.
Thank you.
Darlene, I ask, is there a theory as to why we're seeing these high numbers? I know there's talk about the winter was going to be a tough time, but we're not there yet.
Well, there's a couple
theories to why these numbers are spiking up now at this time of year.
Yeah, it's community spread. It's we get these clusters. It starts before that. It starts with people not following the regulations and the executive orders as set forth. Things like not exceeding the 50-person gathering for non-essential, you know, getting lax and loose with not wearing masks, not social distancing. So then that leads to clusters, which is what we're experiencing now. And then the clusters lead to community spread. So it's just, it takes off literally like wildfire. We have about four different clusters right now that we're aware of. That we're fervently, actively working on in terms of trying to contain it, as well as actively working on ramping up the testing to try to get the whole group of these clusters tested and then subsequently in isolation and quarantine to try to contain it that way. It just, once it starts, it just goes.
So I think we're a little luckier than Broome County, but I expected us to be on that list.
Yeah, I was holding my breath. I was kind of expecting it too, Hilda.
Darlene, I have a question. So is it the same issue in Chemung and Broome County?
It is. They have clusters, which is just, led to skyrocketing numbers for them because of the community spread. And so that's, that's one reason. I think that Jack has previously talked with many of you about our initiative that we're working as fast as we can with partnering with Chemung County on utilizing the Abbott ID Now rapid testing machines and getting those deployed just as quickly as we can. We're still in the training aspect of it this week. Tomorrow actually is a training for the nurses that will be using the machines, and then we can start nailing down locations and the logistics of getting this going.
Kelly, you had a question.
Sorry.
Yes, I was wondering, as far as the number, the 800 that are in isolation or in quarantine, are what percentage of those are actually waiting for their test to come back? Is there a percentage of them that haven't bothered to get the test? And how do we determine? Some of it is from the schools, I'm assuming. My neighbor is in quarantine because there was a student that was positive, but she's not positive. So my question is, I appreciate the 800 that are in isolation and quarantine because that's an abundance of caution. But what percentage of those, there's a certain high percentage of those that are not positive for COVID. Is that correct?
Oh, that's correct. I mean, the majority of them really are they're not positive. They are contacts to a positive. And that is one reason that the number has skyrocketed is because of schools. You know, there's schools are a congregate setting. And when there's a positive, whether it's a faculty or a student, now the numbers increase dramatically because we have to take into account and contact trace the classrooms, the bus, whether they rode on the bus or not, and did they change classes? So then that's more than one classroom. All of those factors figure into it. So yes, the 834 in isolation and quarantine is everybody. It's those who are positive, but as I said, our active positives right now are 227. So all the rest of those are either contacts to a positive, or it's individuals who have been tested for like an elective procedure, or tested, 2 weeks ago when we did our drive-through testing. All of those individuals, all of those 500 individuals, were supposed to stay home and wait for their test results. So it's a combination of a lot of things, but certainly the majority of that number is due to being a contact to a positive.
I think that's really impressive then, that given the number that we have been putting in isolation or quarantine, then it seems like the majority of the procedures and things that you have in place are working. And so if someone on that list then gets their test results back and they're not positive, are they allowed then to go back to their normal activities? And how long is the test, how long is it taking to get your test results back?
Two things there. If they're in quarantine because they have had a test, like for an elective procedure, for that type of reason, then yes, if it's negative, they're out of quarantine. However, if you're in quarantine because you are a contact to a positive, even if they go ahead and get a test to determine if they are or not and they're negative, that will not let them out of quarantine early because of the incubation period.
And we have, and most of that 830 are individuals who are contacts to positives, not the testing people. And we have seen a number of cases. That's why the quarantine is so important. And like you said, Kelly, effective, is because we have seen a number of individuals who are close contacts to positives under quarantine by day 11, 12, start feeling some symptoms. You know, they get tested and on day 13, they're positive. We have seen that happen a number of times. So that's why, people abiding by the quarantine is so very important.
Thank you.
Paul, do you have a question?
Yeah, real quick. So would it be safe to say that the increase in these quarantine numbers could possibly be because we have better ways to identify the virus and our tracing and procedures have increased as well since May?
Well, I would say that testing has increased since May. All of the hospital systems have certainly, I think solidified their plans and made testing sites available. They've been available since then all across the county, as well as now, what we're trying to get ready to stand up. So certainly testing and the constant emphasis on getting tested, that does, lead to certainly the increase in numbers as well.
Thank you.
Mike, you had a question.
A question on people coming in from other states that are supposed to quarantine. Is there any way to keep track of it? Are you finding them to be cooperative? And are they supposed to call in? Aren't they supposed to call a number or something when they come in?
So that's a really hard one. They are supposed to complete a traveler form online if they have traveled to a state that's on the travel advisory list. Some of them do, but a lot of them don't. And we will never know. We will never know those who don't and just it's easier for the ones who fly because they are nabbed, so to speak, at the airport and there's someone there to take their form as they disembark from the plane. But those who drive, there's no way to know. And many drive. Some of the drivers do fill out the travel advisory form, but untold numbers don't.
Thank you. Aaron, Thank you. You have a question?
Yeah, I had a couple questions. One of them was a follow-up on what Jack had mentioned about people in quarantine testing positive after having been in quarantine for close to the 2-week period. And Jack, I was just wondering what kind of numbers you're seeing on that compared to people who have been quarantined, sort of how high some of those numbers have been and related to that. If those are people who may have another household member who's been positive, that it may still be around them, or are we talking about people who are completely away from people who have been positive that whole period?
Yeah, we've seen both. I mean, anecdotally, I couldn't say. I mean, we have seen many multiple cases along those lines, you know, in conversation. I don't think we track that definitively as a metric, so I couldn't tell you. But I mean, certainly we've seen the more likely scenario is, you know, your wife is positive, you separate in your household, but you're still, you know, kind of in your household together. We've seen many, many of those cases. But we have also seen people who have been away from each other for those 14 days. And then, you know, on day 12, 13, that individual becomes positive. So we've seen both.
Okay. My second question was related to the hospitalizations that we have. I was just wondering what kind of data we have on, metrics of people who are hospitalized compared to those who test positive, sort of, and primarily age related brackets. I think that would be good for us to have in our society to understand how, if it's severe primarily to elderly, I know that most of our deaths that are coming out are in the nursing homes. And I know that we've had some younger people hospitalized, but I just am wondering if we have data that we can see on some of these breakdowns and how severe symptoms are, all that kind of stuff, so we can understand it.
I don't know that we would be able to track how severe the symptoms are. However, I mean, we do know, we know who is in the hospital, so therefore we know, you know, what age they are. The majority of the 17 are elderly. But there are some younger ones that are in the hospital also. But certainly it just like, you know, with the deaths, the majority are the elderly, the nursing home folks. It's still primarily hitting that age group.
Well, and anecdotally, have you seen, would you think that it's a low percentage of cases for younger people who have COVID that have any sort of severe symptoms from observation?
Well, again, symptoms, I can't really, you know, if they're, you know, I would be able to report to you, and I can do that if you would like. I can send an email and give you a breakdown of the 17 that are in the hospital, what their ages are. I wouldn't necessarily know how severe their symptoms are other than to know it's bad enough to be admitted.
The nurses talked about people having more pronounced symptoms this time around, haven't they?
That is true. We, you know, the nurses, again, anecdotally feel like, especially with some of the younger ones, symptoms are more severe this time around, and that's leading to some of the younger ones needing to be hospitalized. It just that the symptoms seem to be a little bit more aggressive this time around, which, you know, it would be consistent with the second wave, you know, of 100 years ago, in that the pandemic then, second wave was worse, symptoms were worse.
Scott, did you have a question?
Yeah, I guess leading off that question, do we have a feel for, of the 237, I think you said, that are positives, what percentage are symptomatic and which percentage aren't? And was that different from the positive cases in like April or May?
It's 227 that are active right now. I mean, I think a good number of them are positive. A good number of them are symptomatic, do have symptoms. And again, a lot of them, I would say, from what the nurses are reporting, the symptoms are alive and well. Some of them really are quite sick.
We can, you know, depending upon right now, obviously, with the number of cases, you know, the time to be able to do deep data dives might be a little bit limited, but, you know, we could.
I don't want you to do extra work just for that.
In all the conversations, because obviously we talk daily since when we were out here, then, you know, we had our daily calls, you know, we were seeing a lot, and again, anecdotally, but in our conversations with Darlene and Laura Lee and in their conversations with the nurses, we were seeing a lot of asymptomatic people over the summer, a lot of people who were getting caught by tests. This just feels a little bit different. And again, it's not a definitive statement, it's anecdotal, but yeah. And, you know, like Darlene said, there's a combination. I mean, you have schools open, you have more things, and that's what we want, obviously. But yeah, we are seeing something that's a little bit different. I mean, you know, these are hospitalization numbers that we saw.
did her duty, called in, go get a COVID test. She couldn't get into the test until Wednesday. She didn't get the results back until the following Sunday night. She was out for a week, could have been 2 weeks. During this time, it's very difficult to get substitutes because a lot of substitutes are not willing to go in now. So it's created a real problem and added a whole lot of stress to everybody involved in education. Not that all the rest of us aren't feeling stress also.
Join the meeting.
They just wanted me to communicate that some of the reason for some of the pushback of people not cooperating on that. And, you know, I would assure them that this was all done for the good of the public health and so forth. But I think you have to get the word out.
Being at the beginning, I stopped. And they call me every day.
Yeah. They can't get subs. The rapid testing will help eliminate this.
So a friend of mine went to Rite Aid and had her test done. She got
Join
it
the meeting.
The next day, her results. So Rite Aid was free, and she got her results the next day.
My daughter-in-law didn't have that option.
All right. I don't know how we...
Where'd we leave off? Questions.
But it's part of the record, so we'll just go from there.
Yeah, I'm not looking for any action on that.
I know. All right. Is Jack back on?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is there anything else from you, Darlene, before we move to Jack?
No, I was just gonna I was just gonna tell the quick story to kind of give credence to what the chairman was asking about symptoms. Very late in the day yesterday, we were notified that a school employee is positive, and she was at the ER last evening for breathing difficulties. Now, I don't know her age yet, but the fact that she's not retired, she's still working, so I'm going to say she's younger. That's just an example that, you know, she was at the ER with breathing difficulties, and I do not know yet whether or not she was admitted. So that just anecdotally is I just wanted to give an example to the chairman.
Thank you.
One more thing here. I just want to make a statement here that something seems a little bit ironic to me, and it was mentioned to me the other day, is that through this whole thing so far with the big department stores, some of the big department stores and grocery stores being open, then not one case has been traced back, it seems like, to I don't know, that I can remember, to Walmart or Wegmans, and that more strict restrictions have been put on them. It just seems like they always kind of skate out of this somehow.
Well, yeah, I mean, we certainly had a number of people that go to those places who are positive, and that's why you see their name pop up in our press releases all the time.
All right, any other questions for Darlene? Jack, do you have anything?
Nope, nothing on my end.
All right, any other business? Can we have a motion to adjourn?
I'm moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. Thank you.